are ranked 18th this week. The move up follows an ugly loss last week to Penn State and yesterday's win at Ohio State. Purdue is ranked 19th. Pittsburgh, meanwhile, is number one again in the AP college basketball poll following a week in which the top three teams all lost. The Panthers are a runaway choice, just as they were on January 5th when they moved to number one for the first time in school history and went on to hold the spot for 2 weeks. Connecticut, Oklahoma, and North Carolina, the top three teams that all lost last week. Connecticut lost to Pittsburgh, each dropped one place in the poll. Memphis holds on to number five and is followed in the top 10 by Louisville, Duke, Marquette, Michigan State, and Villanova. The Big 12 Conference has suspended Texas Tech coach Pat Knight one game for complaining about the officials following Saturday's loss to Texas A&M. Knight received a technical foul in the second half of the 79-73 loss in Lubbock for arguing a foul call and complained about the officials afterward to reporters, saying he didn't care what the Big 12 thought. The son of temperamental coach Bob Knight, Pat Knight also was publicly reprimanded by the Big 12 earlier this month for being ejected after running onto the court twice to argue a foul call in a game against Nebraska. The Chicago Bulls will take on the Orlando Magic at the United Center tomorrow night. The Bulls have struggled to a 25-31 mark this season, which puts them 19 games behind Central Division leading Cleveland. The Blackhawks are off today before trying to get back in the win column when they take on the Nashville Predators. The Hawks posted a 3-0 mark on their recent road trip before returning to the United Center for last night's 2-1 loss to Minnesota. They're back on the road in Nashville tomorrow night. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department offers box lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Delivery is available at 239-5632. Strawberry Fields also offers an in-store nutritionist.
Saudi Arabia's government has issued a most wanted list of 85 militants operating outside of the country in places like Yemen, Iran, and the tribal areas of Pakistan. The Saudis are looking for help from international police agencies. The list was prompted by reports that militants are regrouping in neighboring Yemen to launch new attacks. Kelly McEvers reports from the Saudi capital, Riyadh.
The most wanted list includes four men, two Saudis and two Yemenis, featured in this video that recently was posted on militant websites. The video is meant to mark the merger of Al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia with Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia was virtually wiped out in recent years after attacks there that killed nearly 200 locals and foreigners led to massive crackdowns by authorities. Al-Qaeda in Yemen is responsible for a string of attacks in that country, including a blast outside the U.S. Embassy last fall that killed 17 Yemenis. The video says the new group's aim is to rid this region of unbelievers, then take the fight to Jerusalem. Terrorism analysts say the video also was meant to embarrass American and Saudi officials. The two Saudis in the video were released last year from the American Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay, and afterwards they graduated from a well-publicized rehabilitation program in Saudi Arabia. Thomas Heghammer is a terrorism researcher at Harvard.
It was deeply embarrassing for Saudi Arabia, who has been insisting that it is safe to send back Guantanamo detainees, that the Saudis were able to look after them.
Since the video's release, Saudi Arabia has sent a high-ranking counterterrorism official to Yemen. Troops have been dispatched to the Saudi-Yemeni border, and the president of Yemen has called on tribal leaders to turn in suspected militants. Gregory Johnson, editor of a forthcoming book on Islam and insurgency in Yemen, says the government there is not equipped to tackle the problem on its own.
The government's lost a lot of money. It's heavily dependent upon oil exports. And as the price of oil has went down, the government, it's kind of fragile alliance of different tribes and different interest groups that it strengthens with money and different goodies of the state that it can dole out. It's put those in more jeopardy. And so state power has actually decreased over the past year.
Johnson says this is what makes Yemen so attractive to militants in the first place.
What really needs to happen is that the U.S. and Saudi and other kind of regional and Western powers need to come together to help Yemen. And you really have to almost pursue a two-track policy. having the initial one and the short-term goal be to kind of take out these individuals. But in the long term, you really need to help stabilize Yemen.
Without that stability, Johnson says, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula will grow and might even launch attacks as far away as the Horn of Africa. Here in Saudi Arabia, relatives of the men on the new most wanted list are telling local reporters they're cooperating with officials to bring their sons home, says Saudi columnist Hamad al-Bahri.
We are sorry to what happened to our children or to our boys, and we like that Allah, God will help, and the government will help them to come back to the right way or to the right religion.
Bahri says it's not quite so simple. Somebody had to help these militants flee the country in the first place. For NPR News, I'm Kelly McEvers, Riyadh.
Philadelphia is the latest city to see its newspapers in trouble. The company that publishes the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Philadelphia Daily News is the latest to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. More from NPR's Joel Rose.
It wasn't long ago that flying pigs were projected on the side of the building that houses the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News. The new owners of the papers launched the PR campaign, including this radio ad, in response to skeptics who said pigs would fly before the newspapers would make money.
The pigs appeared because Inquirer circulation is up for the first time in 3 years. Home delivery of the Daily News is at its highest point in 6 years.
But the company started missing payments on its debt last summer as the deteriorating economy took an even bigger bite out of advertising revenues. On Sunday night, the company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection to restructure a debt load of nearly $400 million. Officials said the newspapers will continue publishing. Also this weekend, the Journal Register filed for bankruptcy. That company owns 27 dailies, including the New Haven Register. That follows last month's bankruptcy of the Minneapolis Star Tribune and the December bankruptcy of the even bigger Tribune Company, owner of the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune. For NPR News, I'm Joel Rose.
Some professors and students are selecting digital versions of books that can be read off a computer screen. One college in Missouri is the first trying to go book-free. Sylvia Maria Gross from member station KCUR paid a visit to the college.
Most college students are used to going online for music, videos, and news, so why not textbooks? At Northwest Missouri State, all students are issued a laptop when they arrive on campus. Just before his business finance class begins, junior Kevin Green takes out his laptop and clicks on his textbook.
I've read it some. I find it easy to just go through it as he discusses it in class, and highlight things as he brings them up.
Green is one of 500 students testing out digital textbooks this semester, and they're wondering how they'll change the way they study. Freshman Lindsay Ruport is just downloading her text for intercultural communications.
I like having the book in front of me so I can like flip back and forth really fast and like put post-it notes up in the corners of important pages.
Some e-textbooks are just on-screen versions of the bound copies, but the new books are interactive. You can search, mark pages, highlight, and cut and paste passages, even share notes in a kind of social network with the rest of your class, or click on a video.
Riding upon a semi-plastic layer of Earth's fiery interior, the ocean floors and continents that form its crust or lithosphere are in continuing motion.
The new generation of textbooks is trying to be in tune with the way students learn in the age of Wikipedia and YouTube. And textbook writers will have to keep up, according to Frank Lyman. He works at CourseSmart, a digital distributor that's working with 9 major publishers.
Now what you're looking for in an author is a Steven Spielberg. You're looking for somebody who can be the producer, have the vision for what the learning experience should be.
Not everyone is ready to relinquish the heavy old tomes. Northwest Missouri State President Dean Hubbard says when he discussed the plans to move away from physical books on campus, some professors had tears in their eyes.
And the philosophy professor talked about books that were so important to him that he took them and had them leather bound. But then he ended up saying, this is the way things are going, and we're going to go with it.
Professors across the country are signing e-books. 18% of college students have purchased them, according to the National Association of College Stores. But Northwest Missouri State is in a unique position to go entirely digital. In addition to the laptops, students rent all their textbooks from the college. So when a comprehensive selection became available digitally, President Hubbard decided to make the switch.
the timing is just right. Everybody is anxious about the cost of higher education going up.
College textbooks are part of that. One book can cost upwards of $200. E-book versions cost about half that. Some students still need convincing, though. About half at this school say they still prefer physical textbooks. But human resources instructor Allison Strong says she's already noticing students are more likely to bring their laptops than textbooks to class.
I just remind them again, you know, review this chapter, probably more so than I did before, because I think they're actually going to read it more this time.
As students trade their books for laptops, publishers and academics alike are watching the transition, which could have profound changes on higher education. For NPR News, I'm Sylvia Maria Gross in Kansas City.
Tomorrow night at 8, AM 580 will broadcast President Obama's address to Congress. Join host Melissa Block and NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson for live, in-depth coverage, including analysis and reaction. You'll also hear Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal deliver the Republican response to the president's speech. That's President Obama's address to Congress tomorrow night at 8. Well, the recession is changing the way we eat. Consumers are eating out less and trying to cut costs by buying frozen meals. From member station WBUR in Boston, Kurt Nickisch reports.
Up until a few weeks ago, Heather Molina and her husband had a routine for when they got done with their work days in downtown Boston.
Oh, you know, let's just meet up at the sushi place, or, you know, I'm just going to order a pizza as soon as I get home, or I'm going to stop off and just pick up something for us to eat. It's definitely changed a lot in the last 2 weeks.
It's changed a lot, because that's when Melina lost her job at an online travel site. Now, instead of spending upwards of $50 for delivery from the Indian restaurant around the corner, she spends that much on a sack or two of heat-and-eat meals from the high-end supermarket a few blocks away.
So here in the freezer, I have a lot of, couple boxed meals, frozen pastas. These were about $6 a piece.
Melina says she knows how to cook and likes to, but it would take time from her job search.
I find myself a lot busier now. Between reaching out and networking for a new job, I want to be able to start pursuing some more freelance stuff. And I wouldn't be able to do all that if I was trying to figure out how to get a meal on the table.
Melina's newfound eating habits are becoming increasingly common in this economy, at least according to the outgoing CEO of Walmart, Lee Scott. In a speech to other retailers last month, he said the downturn was driving customers out of restaurants and into Walmart.
People came back into the store to buy for eating at home. What they moved to was frozen food. Our biggest increases were in frozen.
And that trend worries registered dietitian Joan Salji Blake.
You know, the misconception is that eating healthy is more expensive, and that's not necessarily true.
Salji Blake teaches nutrition at Boston University. At a supermarket near campus, she finds many frozen and boxed meals high in sodium and saturated fats. But what really gets to her is the cost. The amount of frozen food you get for the dollar, she says, is often relatively low.
Here we have frozen French fry potatoes here. So this is almost $4 a bag. The bag is, you know, a little over a pound here.
For the same price, she says, you could buy a 5-pound sack of potatoes. Buying cheaper, she says, often means more and healthier food.
Listen, canned beans, they need a good PR firm. That's what they need, because these are fabulously nutritious, rich foods that are very, very cost efficient.
With some effort, Salji Blake says you can maintain a nutritious recession diet.
Ooh, that's good.
Marjorie Peskin has been doing just that. She just made a big pot of chicken noodle soup, complete with a whole chicken. Peskin's on a fixed income, on disability, and she says cooking with basic ingredients has been the only way she can afford to feed her two voracious teenagers.
I save about 40% by doing this. So you go in, and there's the fruits and vegetables, and you go down, and there's the cheese and the milk, and then you go down here, and there's the meat. And if you do that, and you don't really hit every aisle in the middle, you save a ton.
Heather Molina concedes that. She's the Boston woman who's been eating more frozen meals since she got laid off to save money. For now, she's going to stick with the frozen stuff.
I could easily start saving even more money, easily. it requires a lot more thought. And I'm just too depressed, like, not really, but I've got other things on my mind than trying to figure out how exactly to put a meal on the table.
Besides, she says, cooking makes her feel too much like a stay-at-home wife. A few weeks ago, she was making good money. Heating up frozen meals is just closer to the professional lifestyle she wants to get back to, where she was eating out or ordering in almost every night. For NPR News, I'm Kurt Nikisch.
It's 5 minutes before 3 o'clock, 31 degrees in Urbana. I'm Celeste Quinn, Jason Croft at the controls in Master Control this hour. Coming up in the next hour, the world from PRI. Thousands of people die in police custody in India every year. Human rights groups accuse India's police of torture. Some police acknowledge that violence towards suspects is widespread. India's abusive police. That story in the day's news coming up today on The World from PRI.
Earth and sky.
You know, I've gone from really being a little kid who really just loves the outdoors, who really just loves the wildlife, to being a professional scientist and a teacher, to then using those skills to become an advocate and to get involved in public policy.
You're listening to Tyrone Hayes, biologist at the University of California, Berkeley. Over years of examining the impacts of pesticides on amphibian and human health, Hayes has become an advocate for banning the pesticide atrazine, now widely used in the U.S. He told Earth Sky he thinks it's time for scientists to begin speaking out.
There are people who feel that a scientist has to be objective and you can't get involved in the politics and the public presentations and things. And I feel very differently. I think the people who have an understanding of the science and who know the science are very much the people who should be presenting to public and helping lawmakers understand what the real implications are.
Hayes' research indicates exposure to atrazine causes abnormalities in frogs and has been linked to cancer in humans.
Economics and in some cases the need to grow more food for a growing population causes us to turn a blind eye, while at the same time we're really putting the environment at risk.
I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Flesser's Candy Kitchen, a local family-owned company featuring hand-dipped chocolates and other homemade confections, on the web at flessercandy.com.
The forecast for Illinois and Indiana is prepared by Mike Sola this afternoon in northern and eastern Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy, with lake-effect snow showers. Elsewhere, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 25 in the north to around 40 south. Tonight, mostly clear this evening, then becoming partly cloudy in southern Illinois overnight. Lows tonight ranging from 5 in far northeastern Indiana to 25 in southern Illinois. Tomorrow in northern and eastern